Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
Look at that, Coach. What do you think we're going to be talking about today? There's some big news. We're going to have some light action, potentially, at Nottingham Field. Welcome to Football 52 with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull. A little production value for this one today, Coach.
That was big time.
Yeah, that's big. You know, the budget's increasing. It's getting exciting around here. Yeah, that was pretty significant news, and I want to kind of get your thoughts on this. It sounds like lights, the act of putting them in is approved and everything. Now it just comes down to raising the funds, right?
Yes, exactly. So grateful to Darren Dunn, Board of Trustees, Andy Feinstein. There have been a lot of people that stepped forward and kind of, I think, changed the narrative. I think at one point, whenever UNC kind of made a deliberate decision not to have lights, I'm sure there were a lot of good points made. I mean, I actually prefer day games for the most part, from a preparation standpoint, from a standpoint of having the team ready for the next week. There are a lot of advantages to day games, even from a coaching perspective. You have the film done, the kind of reviewed before Saturday night is over, and get a chance to watch some other games. So I think that most players and coaches kind of in a lot of ways prefer the day games. But there is no question we are missing out on a huge subset of the Greeley population by not having night games in terms of attendance. And I have said since the day I've got here that lights are an investment, not a cost. I have pointed out the fact that we are the only FCS school that I know of, probably the only FCS school in the country without lights. Certainly when you add the fact that we have a track around our field and the stadium is a few more feet removed, that environment, it's kind of a one-of-a-kind of environment. There's not another Division I school that has a track around their field and no lights. The lights kind of bring the fans a little closer to the action, spotlight it, so to speak. So I've always seen this as an investment, but yet I've really had to walk the line about I knew what I got into taking this job and there were no lights. You know, and so I wouldn't want my players complaining about things that we don't have. And so I can't be complaining about things that we don't have either. But I really, at the same time, it's part of my job to point to opportunities. And I felt like lights were the opportunity. So that's my long soliloquy on, you know, a lot of appreciation for the people that stepped forward and got this moving to the point where it's at now. They're not done yet.
Yeah, a lot of work to get.
It is substantially moved toward having lights for game one this season.
Well, to your understanding, and again, I probably have asked you this before because I know we've talked about lights, but I've always heard a mixed bag of maybe it was the surrounding neighborhood that wasn't crazy about having lights there because the idea of having night games, it would be too loud or something. Then it was maybe a budget, purely a budget issue, or just for whatever reason was never moved to the top. What's your understanding as to why we didn't have lights at this field? Especially maybe when they built it, they didn't put lights. There's a different reason there. But you know, as we progress, the idea of having lights just seemed like a foreign topic for so long.
Sure. I've heard all of those. And the first objection – so I heard the neighborhood kind of narrative that the neighborhood, the surrounding neighborhood may have had some problems with lights. Well, if you've ever been over there, we have seven practice fields and a softball field that are lit up every night for intramural sports. There's nobody using them.
Right.
It's just on a timer. That place is completely lit up. I mean, you feel like you're at a mall parking lot. It is daylight over there every night. So it couldn't have been the lumens, the brightness, that could not have been an objection because there would be no newness in terms of that. In terms of having night games, so obviously late in the season, we're not going to have night games. We don't want to have our fans kind of not come into the game because it's dropping into the 20s in November and December. So I doubt we would have night games unless we were playing meaningful games and television was picking it up and saying, hey, we want to put you in this primetime slot because we have nothing else and we're going to pay you for it. But we would have day games late in the season. So we're probably talking about three, maybe four. We only have 5 to 6 home games a year max anyway.
Right.
We're probably talking about 2-3 nights a year of a home game environment. And I can't imagine anyone in any neighborhood kind of getting too politically active to try to shut that down. That doesn't make any sense to me. You have 353 other peaceful nights. And if you somehow moved next door to a football stadium at some point, I don't get it. You know,
you have to.
A college football stadium.
Well, and I went to UNC, and I remember we played intramurals, and I was always out there. We were out. I mean, sometimes games were, the last games were pretty late into the night because they're college kids, and schedules schedules exist, but sleep doesn't, I guess, maybe. And I remember looking around. There's everybody. There's all these fields are being utilized. Lights are on. Yeah. And they're on for a short time after everyone's done playing, too. So whenever I heard that, I said the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, there are lights on. Are we worried about traffic, people exiting and leaving the area? But most of these games, if you do have a couple of night games, we're not talking extremely late. So yeah, I don't know. As we've progressed through this discussion, it does seem like that was more maybe one or two people, maybe a few people voiced it and it was just loud. But I don't know if it was actually like, no, the neighborhood's putting their foot down.
Right. And let's a couple of other kind of contextual evidences here. Like every high school in the state has lights and all of the neighborhoods have Friday night games.
Right.
And there are what are there? Four? Five high schools just in Greeley alone that have lights and night games. Like, we're not talking about putting out a neighborhood. We're talking about raising up a community through these night games. That's what I believe is going to happen. I'm putting my name behind it. And to have Darren Dunn and Andy Feinstein and the Board of Trustees, Dick Monfort, the chair of that group, everything that I've heard coming back, I haven't sat in on any of those meetings, but all I've heard is support for the idea and acknowledgement that this is an investment and that it's going to pay off sooner than later. It's going to pay off quickly. And then the other thing contextually is like these lights cost $1.6 million. I think it's been pretty well documented now. And so we're actively raising money. There's the idea is to get it done through fundraising alone. $1.6 million, if you, Brady, and with all of your success were to come to me and say, hey, not only that, Lamb, I'm not only going to give you the $1.6 million for the lights, but let me just 10x that this year. Let me give you $16 million. I would say, thank you. You just caught us up to Montana State for this year, not for next year. I need another $16 million next year. So, like, it's an expense, and I'm super grateful, but it's also very appropriate for the level that we're trying to compete at, and I'm so grateful to have to feel a partnership from the university with what we can do. I don't need everything Montana State has, but to have a full measure of effort to do what we can by the community, the donors, the university is just it's humbling.
Well, and if I write a check for that, coach, just don't cash it yet. I might have to move a couple things around before you do that. What does the process look like? I mean, obviously, you're trying to raise money all the time. So what does – because as you mentioned, this was approved by the Northern Colorado Board of Trustees, but it was specifically documented here in Ann Delaney's coverage in the Greeley Tribune that, yes, it is going to be – it's not going to dip into any other funds that currently exist at the university. So this would all be new income coming in.
Sure. Kind of two major tracks going right here. One thing that should be understood historically is that there was always a plan to have lights and the money ran out. The footings for the lights are there at Nottingham at the stadium. So that's saving us some money.
Yeah. that's good. I did not know that.
Yeah,
that's good to know.
It was always in the plans. Things changed. And budgetary realities are real and they are what they are. I have them too. We all have them for our own families, right? Like I get that. But so we have simultaneously right now, Darren Dunn is really you know, kind of not shied away from allowing this to get out in the public, which means he's put himself behind the fundraising or into the fundraising spotlight. If this doesn't happen, he's going to have to answer some questions. And I think that's courageous of him to kind of allow this to go forward. At any point, he could have kind of squashed and said, well, we have a lot of work to do, a lot of fundraising. He believes we can do it, and I really am appreciative about him being courageous in that way. Some specific donors have already stepped up. I'm excited about that. I haven't really asked if I can say their names
in
this kind
of
public forum, you know. But I would like to at some point really acknowledge them, not just privately but publicly. And then the other part of this is just our university facilities. Nate Reinhart runs the university facility and has a general contractor construction background. And so him, in conjunction with the lighting company that we've selected or has won the bid, and then the state, which will be getting involved with what would you call that, regulations, guidelines. And so there's a lot of work now that's really I'm not a part of. It's like, again, it's humbling and encouraging to have people kind of running full speed ahead to try to get this done. Construction, the timeline would need to get started on about April 1st in order to have it ready for the season.
Yeah, because that was, you know, that was the part that not shocked me, but I don't know how long it takes to install these lights and everything. But that's the first goal is, hey, our plan is to get these ready to go by next football season.
Right.
And let me ask this. So if by chance you don't get started by April 1st, as you mentioned, that doesn't put the kibosh on anything. It just says we're not going to probably have these ready for this upcoming football season. It'd be something down the road for the following season.
Right. And I think, you know, from Darren Dunn, AD, to our donors, to, you know, the university administrators, I think that would be an embarrassment. It'd be an embarrassment for me. Our players are aware of it now. So to allow the narrative to go forth and be in public and have the goal be to start on April 1st and have them done by the season, I think all of that puts a lot of pressure on everyone. And look, like, we can deal with failure. We can deal with embarrassment. I'm not saying that it's a deal breaker or going to wreck our season. But like I said, this is not – Even spending a new $1.6 million this year doesn't even move us up the ladder of annual budgetary expenses in football alone. Yeah. Even if we counted this as a football only expense, so I think it's a very manageable expense. Like, I will make a personal donation that's going to be barely noticed as a drop in the bucket, but like, we can do this together, you know, and get this done. It is not. We are not talking about an unreasonable expense.
Coach, when it comes to fundraising, because it's easy for us, for guys like me to talk about, oh, go out and raise the money. How do you raise the money? Is it as simple as you just go, you find donors? I mean, we're in the business of sales, so we reach out to businesses, sit down, have meetings, talk about advertising on the radio station. For you guys, is it setting meetings with people that you know have money? Or do you do stuff? I mean, is there like a car wash? Is there fundraising opportunities? What does that process look like?
What a great question, because I can even hear that question differently when you say, what do you do or what do you guys do? It would be very different. If John Keitzman raises money more on a commercial level, marketing level for our department. Darren Dunn, athletic director, obviously very involved. Jenny Shoup she's a campus fundraiser, director of giving, but she has athletics under her purview. And then there's me. So me at my level, when I first became a head coach, I just kind of grooved myself into the way that I wanted to do it or the way I'm comfortable doing it, and I haven't changed. So my way is, I believe that people that would want to give to the football program kind of through a relationship with the coach just want access to the coach. And so I hope that you've seen that, Tanner, Brian, guys here in the station, people in the community, at the, you know, on the golf courses. In the past, I've had some donors that were cattle folks. And so I'm out chasing their cattle around on horseback, you know, fishing. I try to meet donors on their level. What is it that they are into? And Can I pick up their hobbies, enjoy their company, develop a relationship first, and then you know, either have the athletic director kind of finish up the ask, or oftentimes it's unsolicited. I can say we got a major gift about 10 days ago, completely unsolicited. All I had was a relationship with this donor, and was not solicited in any way. I didn't ask. Nobody from our university asked. There is no tie other than that. And again, I think he wanted to stay anonymous, and so I can't. I want to say and give credit, but it was a major donation. Maybe as far as unrestricted and giving, which means it wasn't geared toward anything. Just hey, go and do this. In terms of a one time gift, it was probably the biggest or one of the biggest.
Wow,
that's ever happened.
And this is a relationship that you've had for a bit now. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a relationship.
Again, from what we've seen here at the radio station, I mean, we don't ask a ton, but when we do, you show up for stuff, and it's awesome. You know, when we say, "Hey, coach, we've got this going on. Yeah. We had the autism. I know it's small potatoes, but it was very special to a lot of people. But the autism, dad's night out. You know, I asked you once about that, and you were so excited. You were so passionate." And all these, and I saw that all these dads are just surrounding you, wanting to pick your brain. It was a really cool moment. So when I think of you saying, like, I meet people where they are, and you know, we just talk, and it's access, whatever. But I also see you working and asking questions to those dads. Like, I was watching it. This wasn't a hey, I'm here, ask me about football. Yeah, that was a lot of that because it's dads, and we want to hear about Division I football. But there was a lot of those conversations too, where you could tell you genuinely cared about the people that are surrounding you. Yeah. And I think that shows that bleeds through. And a lot of people see that. And I think that's why these kind of projects can become a reality.
Yeah, I do. It's not an act. I care about people that care about the things I care about. And I care about people that care about UNC and UNC football or other sports for that matter. We're all in this together. We have a great relationship with the other sport coaches on campus. And so I try to be that, and I'm not afraid to, you know, kind of embarrass myself, try new things, step into forums that I'm not used to, and I'm not afraid to parse off some of my family or free time in order to do that. My wife and I have always considered it a lifestyle. Being a head coach is a lifestyle. It's not a 9-to-5 job. It's not I can't put a cap on it and say it's 80 hours a week. It's really 24/7. My players know where I live. They have access to me. My wife is aware at all times that she's a public figure to some degree. She doesn't get a paycheck from UNC, but she understands that's an important role in the community. And it's one of the things we really missed when I left the Southern Utah head coaching job and went to BYU. In many ways, it was much more high profile in terms of the number of things that were – you know, written or the number of times I was quoted or the number of times I was criticized in public or praised, much more high profile, but not as the face or one of the faces of a university or the face of the football program. And we missed that. We missed being able to move the needle that way, to represent, to try to strive to be a model for the community as a husband and wife and a family.
Coach, this is all just great timing. Because you're coming off of an improved season, and you know, many of those games, even in losses, they were competitive games. I still think that game up north against Colorado State, people still think about that. They're seeing, okay, is football on the rise here? We're seeing all these local names, these guys that we followed throughout the area. That's cool. Then we hear lights. There's a possibility, and this is the loudest it's ever been, at least to my knowledge, as far as realistically. Getting lights there to Nottingham Field. So it's just, there's a lot of buzz around this program. Maybe collectively, when we're just talking about football, local names, success, and then suddenly lighting, this seems like the most buzz surrounding this university, real buzz, I want to say, because there was a former Bronco that was hired to be head coach. There was buzz for about a month or so, a couple months maybe, and then it kind of died down. This has been a steady climb, it seems like, for at least the past year.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, and that's this job, right? That's this program. This football program is at that point where every coach that that, you know, signs their name to be the next head football coach, you're going to fail spectacularly and be run out of town, or you're going to succeed spectacularly. There just is no middle ground. You either, you know, to improve this program and become competitive on the field to win a championship is that's a story that movies are made of, that yeah. books are written about. And, you know, it just takes a monumental amount of work, vision, buy-in. And in the end, it should be the players that get all that credit. But to be on that boat when it sails like that, that's the vision.
Speaking of players, how do lights, you know, because me, I understand it. Like, I played high school football. There's something awesome about Friday Night Lights, and there's something about knowing you're not going to play every game at night. Like you said, you might play one or two, but just kind of knowing that it's there, that there's a possibility. How does that help with recruiting, and also just from the marketing standpoint of, we're the only team in the Big Sky that doesn't have lights. Right. How do those things really help the football team?
Okay, so let's start with the players. For the players at any program, doesn't matter whether I've been at the biggest schools with the biggest resources or not. Anything that you kind of give them or support them with, there's an uptick in motivation, in buy-in, in appreciation, in gratitude, and all of those things have a lot to do with building a championship culture. And so that's the first thing, is like, our players are very aware right now that the university is stepping investing. Forward and investing in football. So that's kind of, I think, the first level of just the difference that can make to a team. And then, as I alluded to earlier, for the university officials to step forward and say, we're doing it. So now the players know about it. I mean, I didn't want to get out in front and say anything to our players and then maybe have it not happen, right? Because that could be detrimental. So I think, and like I said, we'll survive it. You know what I mean? Like, that's part of being a head football coach, is to try to teach guys to come through disappointing moments. But we don't need to unnecessarily create disappointing moments during or in the off season, during the season or in the off season. So, you know, we're all keeping our fingers crossed here and working as hard as possible to make sure that this makes a major difference. The next difference, I would say, our student section is on the east side facing the sun with aluminum bleachers. And we generally play at noon, 1 o'clock. College students aren't always in the best mood on Saturday around noon. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. they're out late on Friday night. They're partying. And they ramp it up in the evening. And we're going to be a destination choice now. And they're not going to be out there trying to decide whether they want to get a sunburn and support the Bears, or whether they, you know, stay home and get ready for the night party and rest up. So we will be that party, and that's what we're working hard for right now.
Well, and potentially too, you can have games that start when it's daylight out, and then it ends when it's dark too. So it's not just dark all the way through, but just, well, the Lightning game last year. Who was that against, Coach?
Shadron. Yeah,
I know that there was like realistic concern. Mm-hmm. We got to get going here pretty soon, because if this thing bleeds into where it would potentially finish at dark, we can't do it.
Yeah.
So there was not that we're going to have lightning games all the time.
Yeah.
But that happened just this last year, and that was something we talked about. We got to hurry up and get this thing done.
Yep, absolutely. Our it was an interesting conversation when the game was postponed or called for the moment, I guess is the way it is. The head coach and I from Shadron met at midfield, and I explained to him. I said, you've probably noticed, but we don't have lights here. And then he's looking around like, oh my gosh, yeah, you don't. Like, they have lights. They don't have a track around their stadium. Like, Shadron State has an excellent facility. And so he became aware of that. And I'm like, so if this delay happens for too long, the game will either be canceled. There is no record. There's no win. There's no loss. And it was like, for them, it was a close game. Like, we controlled it start to finish, but we weren't really pressing down the field. We were playing great defense and punting when we had to. We ended up winning the game 17-0, right? So at the point where it was called early in the second half, I think they felt like they could make a run and win the game still. And so I said, our only option would be, and I've already cleared this with our administration, our only option would be, if this delay is too long and it gets dark, we need to move to one of our practice fields that's lit. And he didn't hesitate. He said, absolutely, let's do it, coach. And so that I was almost rooting for that because I thought it would have brought some public awareness to the fact that we had to go play on the practice field to finish a game,
wow,
which would be unique in Division I football.
I don't remember talking about that. Would that have really happened? Would you guys – so it sounds like you would have really done that.
We saw the storm coming earlier in the week. We cleared it with the Big Sky, with the Big Sky officials, because I didn't really know – like, I proposed it, but I didn't know, are you allowed to move from one venue to the other, right? But I knew that if this game was delayed at all because of lightning for any significant period of time, we may not be able to get back out onto the field in order to finish the game. And what had really concerned me was the week before – UC Davis and Mercer played a game at Mercer, and that game was delayed significantly long enough for lightning that the neutral stadium that they were at said, you're done. You've only rented this for a 7-hour period, and it's done. We're bringing in our cleanup crew. We have a new event coming in tomorrow. And so that game, even though three quarters of it was played, that game was declared a no contest. No wins, no losses awarded. A bunch of kind of wasted effort from a win-loss standpoint.
Yeah, well, last one on the lights and we can move on. How do you feel? I know you said we can't really talk about numbers maybe right now and things like that, but are you feeling one way or the other about the potential of having lights for next fall? Are you feeling really optimistic today as we sit here on February 25th, or is it like 50-50 at this point?
I will say this. Athletic Director Darren Dunn is a steward of this university. I have not seen him be excitable to the point where he would get out in front of his skis. And so when he allows this to go public and when he says to me, I am confident that this is going to be done, and his actions and public words speak that, I know that we have a president, a board of trustees, a handful of top donors, and an athletic director that have all displayed confidence in the plan and each other. And so I don't have any concerns other than it's not done yet, you know.
Yeah.
I can't speak for, again, Nate Reinhardt, our facilities leader. I can't speak for the construction company, the lights company that actually has to install this. But I know that just with the people that have moved this so far, it gives me tremendous confidence.
Well, it's exciting. Just even talking about it is exciting. This is the most realistic it's ever been. Also, big news. We got the light stuff. And then out of nowhere, at least to me, the president of the University of Northern Colorado, Andy Feinstein, has decided to step down. He'll be there, I believe, until August 1st, Coach. But how much of a shock was that to you?
Well, huge shock. I didn't see it coming at all. But I also know I've gotten to know Andy personally. I mean, we've hiked together. We've had meals, socially, hung out in Glenwood Springs, you know. And my wife and Andy's wife, Carrie, are close friends and supportive of each other. They understand a little bit what each other are going through. Being a public figure at all times, you represent something that you're not directly tied to, at least in terms of a paycheck, maybe. So I think he did call me before the news came out, and I don't know how many people he called, but I was really grateful for that, and didn't just come right out and say it. And so being that I don't get a ton of phone calls from him personally, I was kind of like, oh, where is this going? Mm. You know, but he just, as he said publicly, it was just time. They're like, you're always on. And as a university president. And I think particularly with his approach, his style, he's very approachable at all times. He's approachable and available to students, to faculty, to community. He's supportive. I've talked about it in here, like being realistically, no, he's not an athletics-only president. You could have that. They're rare. But he's not going to steal from one side of campus and funnel it all to athletics or anything like that. He is constantly on and constantly pressing for improvements in all areas of the university. And he's had to make a lot of really difficult decisions about matching our budgetary restraints with the realities of the university. And he's made a lot of difficult cuts. And I can see how it would wear on somebody with his talents that has the ability to do other things in life. And so I, not to speak for him, I think most of that was the way that he said it. but I feel like it was genuine. I did have somebody in the community a couple of days ago kind of try to, well, do you think he was under pressure, a student enrollment? And I'm like, that's never crossed my mind. I think Andy has 100% full support of all of the decision makers around here, including me, and you know, the student enrollment challenges that we've faced, I think, have a lot more to do with what's going on nationwide
sure.
with colleges than it, and where UNC sits, kind of on the pecking order of Colorado options. I think it has far more to do with that than anything that Andy has or has not done.
Yeah. Well, either way, you know, like I've said, we've heard mostly, I mean, pretty much all positive about Andy. I mean, every time I've talked to him, he's been gracious with his time. But it, you know, as far as community leaders around here, there's, to me anyway, there's just been not a lot of negative that surrounds him. And it's not easy to do that in that kind of position, to have more often than not pretty positive conversations around your name.
I'm very concerned about what's next.
Are you really?
Yeah. I'm happy for Andy, happy for Carrie, knowing them on a personal level. That's
yeah.
the first thing that was my first reaction, is just personally, like, congratulations. Thank you for everything that you've done. And then, you know, after I got off the phone, I was very concerned. We went through this at Southern Utah. We had a new president come in. He decided he wanted his own athletic director. And so I not only lost the president that hired me, I lost the athletic director that hired me. The new president came in and said, look at our budget. Why are we competing in Division I? This doesn't make any sense from a business standpoint. And I said, I agree. You're completely right. He said, we need to drop to Division II. And we won the Big Sky in football that year. I mean, you can't drop kind of immediately. That's not realistic, right? You have to have a place to go. We won the Big Sky outright in football that year. And that kind of the new president had put these things out in the community, and the community was like, it doesn't matter. Money doesn't win games. Look at our football team. Just won the Big Sky. You know, we're overcoming tens of millions of dollars of deficit here. But eventually he got his way, and he pulled Southern Utah out of the Big Sky. I was long gone by then, saw the handwriting on the wall, but he pulled Southern Utah out of the Big Sky, put them in a quote-unquote cheaper conference with schools that were kind of growing. Well, what Southern Utah found is all those schools in their new conference outgrew them immediately too. They began pouring money into athletics, and pretty soon SUU was the lowest budget in that conference. And so now SUU is paying a $5 million penalty to try to come back to the Big Sky to have some geographic semblance of order for their university. I mean, the athletics affiliation also is I think suggestive of your academic peers, and I think the whole campus benefits by the athletics association within a conference. So I think they're back on the right track, but those were very difficult times for Southern Utah when a new president came in and approached it just in a different way, where he said, look, I'm a businessman, and this doesn't make sense the way we're trying to do business. And in many ways, he was right.
Well, and when you talk about – I mean, this is something that crossed my mind too. You even said it earlier. Andy was pretty much spread out. You know, he was supportive, loved athletics, but he was a spread out president. He not one seemed to be at the top. He was trying to be as even as possible. Yeah. There could be a fear. You hear this all over the country where a different president takes over for a school. Maybe they're – all in on athletics, maybe too much, or maybe they're the opposite of that. And it's, why are we wasting so much time with this and money with this? So I can hear that, you know, as far as that being a genuine concern. Who's going to be that next person that comes in, and where will their emphasis be? And do they want to come in and make a bunch of crazy changes right off the bat, and with personnel, funding, whatever?
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah, I think a lot of people are concerned. You know, I would I won't be part of the interview process, most likely. I mean, that's it's not realistic, and I don't know that I would have the time to dedicate to something like that. But, you know, just kind of the answer to a true false statement, is football a major driver towards student enrollment? Is football success on the field a major driver towards student enrollment? I think there are a lot of very experienced, intelligent presidents that would say no, it's not one of the main drivers. And there are sitting presidents around the country who would say, absolutely, it's the number one driver. It's you know, it's a top five driver. So I think, you know, I'm nervous about what the next president will try to do. I can hope that Andy has left a strong legacy of, look, there are a lot of important things on campus, and we're gonna work like hell to raise them all up. And I always respected that about him. He was clear in his intentions. He was clear in his actions, and very communicative with athletic staff and head coaches about the challenges that he was facing and that we were facing as a university. And we always felt communicated to and all in it together. And that's about as much as a head coach can ask.
Does it give you some kind of relief in this stress portion? Because I can see why it makes 100. I'd be feeling the exact same way. He is going to stay on until August 1st. I'm assuming will he be somewhat a part of the search, or the at least the process, interview process. Maybe not conducting interviews, but maybe he'll be sitting in some of those meetings where maybe he can instill some of what his philosophy and what he believes would work in the area.
I wouldn't know that. Yeah. I know that if he chose to get involved in that and spend his time and efforts doing that, he would do a great job, and he has the respect of a lot of decision makers. Obviously, I don't think he'll make the decision to choose his predecessor, but I think he could influence it if he chose to, because of the amount of experience and respect that he's earned in this community.
Coach, I love that we could kind of get into that too, because I'll admit, right when you said, I'm very concerned, yeah, I was taken aback by that, but not shocked. I asked, yeah, I had Coach Smiley in for the podcast too, and I asked him kind of his thought process on it as well. And Coach was kind of more of the, you know, whatever happens, happens, but he did see it, like you talked about at Southern Utah, when he was in Sheridan, he saw some of that stuff go where, hey, we had a president that was all in on sports, and then the next president was all out on sports. So there's reasons to be concerned when something like this happens, 100%.
Yep, and Smiley makes a great point. I've kind of alluded to it with the lights. If there were some kind of disappointment on the timeline for the lights or something, like, we in sports, we deal with what is. We adjust as necessary, and no excuses for not being successful.
Coach, while we have a few minutes here, we're going to continue on with our player breakdown here. And as I try to get some hints here as I'm building my own depth chart, and I'm going to send it to you at the end of the at the end of the off season here, and we'll see how close
Fantastic.
We are. But I thought I was getting you a couple weeks ago, because I was like, okay, whoever he names first, that's who is probably at the top.
It's but numeric.
You're doing numeric.
I go numeric and down the roster.
So it's not none of my research, none of my findings have led me anywhere other than names. Although, yes, you have gone into great detail about specific players and their leadership qualities. So I'll deduce some of that from these previous podcasts. But today we're looking at the linebackers. And if you guys missed any of our position breakdowns, we've looked at the offensive line so far, the defensive line. Last week we spent some time on the running backs, and we're going to jump on over to the defense, back over to the defensive side of the ball, because you were telling me this linebacking core you're really excited about.
Well, keeping the theme going, right, of a developmental program is going to have the biggest difference over time. If we talk about a developmental program being basically investment, right, like we are not – The analogy for a program being built in the transfer portal to me is day trading. You are maximizing every opportunity every day to try to get your team as good as it can be. You're not looking toward the future. You're looking for a bunch of 1 year players. Nobody illustrates that better than Indiana, right?
Yeah.
And if somebody out there is listening and says, well, how come we're not doing it that way? Well, Indiana has Mark Cuban's money. And that's the major driver. If you've paid close attention, you've heard their president and athletic director kind of walk back a lot of the credit that's going to the head coach and say, look, we put this in place in 2023, hired a coach in 2025 with all of these resources. So they're kind of making sure that they get their share of the credit too. I found that very interesting.
Yeah.
We don't have that. I'm not looking for that. That's not the job I took, signed up for. What we have is, I'll put it this way, Liam Neeson, a very particular set of skills that's been demonstrated. We recruit local high schools. We recruit for development potential, length and speed, and then we outwork all of our opponents in the weight room first. That is going to be our guiding light, our North Star. So a lot of the early successful players that we've had on the field in terms of all conference and stuff like that have been the players that aren't super developable, the skill players, the Cam Chapas, the Carver Cheeks, the Braden Monroes. Those players, those are skill players. They can only grow so much. Mm-hmm. Whereas offensive and defensive linemen, we're talking about growing these guys, especially when we grayshirt them. We're talking about from the time we sign them until the time they start to significantly contribute in their second or third year, 60, 70 pounds of muscle. This takes time.
Yeah.
And so to get back to linebackers, we started with the O-line, and I think that's where we're going to have the biggest breakthrough in terms of player development that our on-field product has seen since I've been here. The defensive line, we went to the defensive line, and then the positions that will benefit from great offensive line and defensive play, which is the whole team, but directly the running backs. And now let's go to linebackers. And running backs and linebackers are also developmental positions, especially linebacker. Running back, you have to have certainly some natural skills or developed skills that bring you to the table. So again, starting numerically, KJ Smedley has been here from the beginning. He was
great guy too.
Yeah, well, and was the first recruit because the moment I got the job, he was committed as a mid-year early enrollee. And so the moment I got the job, the athletic director, the KJ's father were both reaching out to me and saying, "Hey, you've got a committed mid-year player. He's supposed to show up next week. It's your right not to follow through on the scholarship offer." And I didn't even watch the film. I got a call from KJ's dad. I said, "Look, if the previous staff recruited you, I am a steward of the university. 100%, I'm going to honor that. The one thing that I need you to know is that I'm going to decide where you fit. If I'm putting my trust in this process and you and your decision to come here, you got to make sure that I get to decide where you fit. I'll evaluate you and then move you where you fit." And I didn't know anything about him. But he was signed as a safety, and he's since moved to linebacker, and he's gained 40 pounds of muscle, and he's doing a great job. He's played a lot of snaps for us already in his career. One of our best leaders and brings energy, as you said.
Oh, just incredible young man. What is he at? What does he weigh right now?
Right now, today, 227.
227.
Yep. And we probably, when we signed him, he was not 200 pounds, not even close. So he's come a long way. In a lot of ways, Carson Keach is another kind of. He's played some linebacker for us. He may end up playing safety this year. Parker Colorado, another Colorado guy, and so we're kind of counting on him or are counting on him to fill a role somewhere. Blake Palladino is interesting. One of the top quarterbacks in the state out of Dakota Ridge High School when he was a senior, and if you go to round two. The majority of high schools and look at their quarterback, you're going to see one of the best athletes and most competitive guys on the field, not necessarily college potential as a quarterback. We have for a long time made a living on former quarterbacks. I talked about Blake Westland on the defensive line in the same way, starting quarterback for his high school. Blake Palladino was a starting quarterback at Dakota Ridge.
So was he starting quarterback, but did he play both sides of the ball too?
No.
Just starting quarterback and he's making that transition,
right.
Which
–
can be fascinating too because quarterbacks see things so differently.
Yeah.
And they're looking at defenses, so being able to bring that perspective over to the linebacker side of the ball, that'll be fascinating.
If Blake Palladino becomes a starter, which we expect, and he becomes an all-conference player, which we expect, it will be one of the clearest illustrations of how Northern Colorado is building their program versus the other teams in our conference. I can tell you there will be no other team in our conference that recruited a high school quarterback who had zero snaps of defense, turned him into a linebacker or defensive end in Blake Westland's case, and they became all-conference. That's just not how college football programs are being built right now. What teams are doing, they're going into the portal. They're finding the 1 to 2 year player that they think is best and the one that they can get and then paying them a chunk of money. We still have not paid any recruit any extra money. We have recruited only with scholarships. We're the last team in the Big Sky to be able to say that. We are not recruiting. We are not inducing with money. You have to come here and earn it. That's how we're going to build the program.
Mm. I love that too. And I'm going to be watching this one closely because you said it with Blake. If we can see that transition really take hold and he's a starting linebacker for the Bears, that says everything about what you guys are doing. At the end of the day, are you a football player? Because we're going to bring you in as a football player. We're going to find the realistic best spot for you, best position for you, and build from there.
Absolutely. Kai Shelton. Kai Shelton played significantly for us last year as a true freshman. We ended up protecting his redshirt year, playing him in less than five games, and so he's still got four left. Kai is not that developmental. We didn't move him from another position. He was a very good high school linebacker in an under-recruited state, and so and I think we may not have gotten Kai in our first or second year of recruiting because I think the perception of UNC now is just different. And players are now and high school coaches are now saying UNC football is a good place to go. Mm. You should be excited about signing with UNC football. And Kai's one of those where like he's a little bit better and was a little bit better and more ready than a lot of our early recruits in the first 2 years. Very, very good linebacker. Has worked hard, gained the weight, gained the strength, having a tremendous offseason right now. Colby Olsen is a localish, I mean Cheyenne guy, so very local, but not, yeah. But out of state technically. Who's walked on for us and came from the wrestling program, and he's just kind of like carved out a niche for himself, and really proud of Colby and his approach on the daily. Hudson Vogeser, we've talked about this a lot of times. We don't like really go to the portal. It's not part of our recruiting process. Hudson came to us from New Mexico State through the portal, but he's from Loveland High School. You know, he's an extremely local guy and started for us at middle linebacker last year. That's the kind of portal kid that we're looking for. Again, we had five portal kids this year sign with us. Four of them were Colorado kids coming back home.
Love that side of it too. Just keeping in touch with those guys.
Yeah. So those are some of the top guys. We did add Tyler Woods from the junior college level this year. He's going to play a big role for us. Moves very easily on his feet, very mobile, and really had to gain some weight and strength. And he's done that just since early January when he showed up. I think just getting in a Division I program with the resources, even the nutrition station that you're not quite used to at the junior college, and the people around you being a little bigger and stronger, he's really rallied and met that standard. I'm excited about it.
I love kind of going through these because, again, these are just chicken scratch notes. But you got one guy that was a safety. You got another guy that was a quarterback. You got another dude that was a walk-on, but he was from the wrestling program in Cheyenne. Just really fascinating research that you guys are doing as far as finding athletes and – okay, they're football players, they're athletes, how can we turn them into this position? And that's kind of a theme I'm getting here. And we've seen it work quite a bit. We've seen a lot of guys where they've moved around in different positions just recently, and they excel in those other positions.
Yeah, we've talked about it from so many different angles on this program and even off air. We just have to do it differently at Northern Colorado.
Yeah.
And I give a lot of credit to Darren Dunn for seeing that potential in me. If we get this program, when we get this program to where I believe it's going to get, he should get a lot of credit because the easy hire is just to go to Montana or Montana State or North Dakota State and hire a coordinator. All of those guys would love to be the head coach at Northern Colorado. They were all available to Darren Dunn. But I think in most of the business world, I think a lot of fans would be excited if you went to North Dakota State or Montana State and said, hey, they won the championship. We're bringing in the D coordinator. We're bringing in the O coordinator. That's our new head coach. Fans would generally be excited, but you really wouldn't do that in the business world. There is just no relation to the way that Montana State can win and North Dakota State can win and UNC. And so to look for a head coaching candidate that will bring a – unusual or maybe even unique philosophy to this particular situation, and having demonstrated that before in a similar situation, it's a courageous move by the athletic director.
Well, I mean, I'm excited to see, you know, what the future looks like. I'm already getting pumped for spring ball and all that. The lights discussion was fun, and we got real and honest about you know talking about a president that's moving on and what realistically goes through the minds of coaches too, because we don't always make direct comparisons. Your job in the real, you know, the real world as far as other jobs go, but there's a lot of those comparisons, and that's one of them. Anytime the top dog moves on, you start wondering who the next one's going to be, and are they going to be coming in and making some crazy changes? So we'll be obviously following that process along and seeing who the next president's going to be.
It's overused, but I'll say it'll be interesting.
It will be interesting.
Very interesting.
Coach, always appreciate you. Quickly, who's winning in a race, me or Tanner Schwint? Because that's happening. I have challenged him. We put it to you when you were out there. You didn't answer yet. Now that he's not here, don't worry. He wears boots and stuff.
So, yeah, so. The only basis I have is at any point where I've talked to either one of you guys about doing something active, working out, watching your diet, watching what you eat, putting effort into something physical, Tanner always shies away from that. And you know, he's kind of – it's distasteful to him to do any type of you know, bodily or health improvement. I think it's just – his 100%. Knee-jerk reaction is just to say, well, you're anal or whatever.
Yeah, I'm going to have a beer and eat a cheeseburger and watch cow sales.
And so for him to jump in and kind of challenge you to this race, the only thing I'm thinking is, does he have some kind of secret?
I don't know.
What I would say to you is just from a body composition standpoint and a personality standpoint, I would try to make this race as long as possible.
That's what people keep saying.
I think if you go to 100 or 200 meters or 400 meters or a mile, like I'm putting all my money on you, you know, but –
short burst.
He's got me a little concerned.
He's very confident. Now, he's a cocky guy anyway.
Yeah.
But he's strangely confident in this area, which is running, and he hates running. Yeah, he runs from cows and he goes to milk them and stuff, but that's a different kind of running.
I don't think he does a dairy. That's great.
We just all assume that he's milking cows out there.
He's a full-on like cow-calf operation guy, to my knowledge.
Yep.
And you just offended him in the worst way by calling him a dairy cattleman.
All the time.
He's out there milking cows.
Yes. Even though they're not milk cows. He's out there doing it. He's getting the job done. So we'll see. I think we're doing that March 19th. I'll shoot you a text because we'd love to have you out there for our watch party at Big City Roadhouse for March Madness. And hopefully that day, maybe the Bears will be playing that day. Maybe. If they can win the Big Sky Conference Tournament, maybe there's a local tie-in.
They've sure been hot. They've turned it around. Yeah. Inspirational for everybody in our department. Everybody's paying close attention because it's tough to do that. It's tough to go on a losing streak like they did and then somehow find a way to gut it out and turn it around.
Yeah, it's a blast to watch this team. I think 7 in a row for this team. So with just 3 more games remaining in the regular season and then on to the Big Sky Conference Tournament. Coach, always appreciate it, my friend. I'll let you run in there and join the fellows from Good Morning NoCo, and we'll look forward to catching up with you next week.
Thanks, Brady.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.